This has been a bruising summer for some of Detroit's best-known arts organizations. As we heard earlier this week, the Museum of Contemporary Art Detroit and Detroit Institute of Art are both grappling with claims of racism leveled by current or former staff. We wanted to find out how some of the major funders in the arts see these issues. Priya Sarkar leads arts programming for the Knight Foundation. Based in Florida, it's made Metro Detroit a focus area, sending millions of dollars to artists and institutions. Priya Sarkar, welcome to Stateside.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Would you say that foundations have an understanding of what artists and curators are talking about when they say that there are issues of systemic racism in the arts?
Yes, I would say that's true. I think that's the case for a few reasons. One, not only because it is, you know, part and parcel of us being able to do our mission correctly. You know, we're serving communities and we have to think about all of the factors that contribute to how people experience art, how they are able to access it, or what barriers there might be to that, how people create art and have it shown or are able to share it with audiences. And so it's absolutely integral to what we're seeking to foster. And at the same time, I think another reason that folks think of that is because, at least in my experience, whether at Knight Foundation or even in speaking with other colleagues in the arts and cultural philanthropic community, so many of us have actually, you know, been practitioners, you know, whether we were practicing artists, or still are in some cases, or whether we have run organizations. So I think that, you know, just as individual people working in arts philanthropy, we kind of all bring our own experiences to that and have, you know, either come up against some of the challenges that our folks that we're trying to support now are also experiencing.
Now, you have a lens on this from having spent a lot of years as a working artist before getting involved in philanthropy. Can you maybe give us an example of something that is a more common practice in grant making right now to encourage that money gets into more diverse organizations that maybe wasn't really a thing when you were out there trying to get your own projects funded?
Sure. You know, I would actually offer an example that has to do with not being an organization. So years ago, yes, I was a practicing artist and kind of doing, you know, working as a barista and also, you know, practicing art. And I think one thing that I saw at that time that was, gosh, probably 15 years ago, there wasn't a lot of philanthropic support available to individual artists. I think there still aren't a ton, but there are more, you know, nationally speaking. And one of the things that certainly Knight Foundation does and has done for many years is fund not only organizations, but also individual artists and collectives.
Why is that important to addressing systemic racism?
One is an issue of just how people organize and how they think about their work. Artists, you know, there are a lot of folks who are practicing and are doing it on their own or just in a group and don't necessarily either have the skills or expertise or just sort of the exposure to nonprofit as a sector. You know, what does it mean to be a 501c3 or have nonprofit tax status? You know, what does that entail? Do I need to organize in that? And, you know, certainly while there's a lot about, you know, the nonprofit sector and that setup that can be helpful in terms of being able to receive donations, et cetera, you know, it's not necessarily the end all be all in my own personal opinion of how you might want to organize if you're trying to create and share art or to engage communities through art. And I think a lot of folks, you know, across racial and ethnic, you know, and cultural and socioeconomic backgrounds, they're not necessarily going to immediately know or go to the idea of starting a nonprofit organization. So if you want to be able to truly support the breadth of the arts and cultural community in any city or any community, I think those support systems and the resources need to be there for individuals and collectives and folks who are just not necessarily going to be operating within the nonprofit kind of the system. And I think that another piece of that is that for-profit is you know, a perfectly acceptable way to be an artist. You know, I think sometimes there can be a perception that, well, capital A fine art, or, you know, if you're engaging with audiences or communities and you're trying to help them experience art, that, you know, kind of a nonprofit organization is definitely the way to go. But for a lot of, you know, people, you know, it's important to be able to support yourself or partly support yourself through your creative work. And, you know, those folks shouldn't necessarily be penalized by not being able to also have access to, you know, resources to help them get going and help them get more traction with their work than nonprofit organizations.
Yeah. So those individual gifts kind of take some of the burden off of artists mm-hmm. who may not want to become a one person institution
sure.
with nonprofit tax status and all.
Right.
Priya, there's been a lot of talk in recent weeks about what foundations can do to encourage accountability, ensure that arts groups are standing by the equity pledges that they're making in this moment. What are some of the ways that you see that working, maybe with funders holding feet to the fire or keeping on with the friendly pressure?
Sure. I think there are several ways that the philanthropic sector can do this. You know, one really kind of straightforward way is through the grants that we have with organizations or you know, groups, collectives. You know, I think I'll just share that there is kind of a balance that philanthropic funders try to strike between making sure, of course, that the grant is successful and trying to help the grant to be successful, whatever it's for, whether it's a project or programming or general operations supporting that organization, and trying not to meddle too much in the operations of an organization. And that's certainly in recent weeks, we could say, been a topic of, I think, great discussion in just conversations that I've been part of, is how to do that properly. And so I think a really logical way to do it is through the lens of any particular grant you have, especially if you're, you know, mission is to serve a community, to serve the breadth of the community. You know, for Knight, we are certainly striving to support arts and culture that's truly reflective of the community. And part of being reflective of the community is truly looking at each community and the demographics of it, which always change, right? So if within the context of a particular grant, there are elements that seem like they need to be present for that grant to be successful and to achieve both the objectives of the grantee as well as the objectives of the funder. And, you know, presumably that's why the grant was made, is because there's alignment and synergy between those things. If there are questions or red flags that arise that kind of make us, you know, either wonder or be concerned whether the grant could be successful and carried out in the way envisioned, then I think, you know, that's an area where the funder can certainly have conversations, try to ensure that the grant is likely to be successful and that the right mix of factors is in place to make that happen. So one is through the lens of grants. Another one is by, you know, just kind of walking the talk ourselves, you know, striving to behave in the way that we also hope, you know, the folks who are implementing their programs and with the support of our dollars, you know, are doing. And, you know, I'll just kind of share an example of that through Knight Foundation is, you know, for several years, we have funded the Knight Arts Challenge. We've held the Knight Arts Challenge, which is an open call for arts and cultural projects. And we've done that in Detroit since 2013. So each year that we do the challenge, and we're doing it, you know, every other year now, we seek to kind of revisit the application process, make sure that, you know, the application itself is, you know, accessible and easily, you know, easily understandable for folks who are interested in applying. And the Night Arts Challenge itself was established as a way to be an easier kind of access to philanthropic funding than sort of a typical full-fledged grant application. So it's the first round application is a 150-word description of your idea. The idea being that, you know, great ideas can come from anywhere and anyone. And hopefully by having a simple first step, that is, you know, a way to more easily access philanthropic funding for that idea. And another thing that we do, and each year we try to do better at this, is in the outreach where we are offering this opportunity. So trying to do information sessions throughout Detroit, trying to, and I should say it's greater Detroit, it's Detroit, Hamtramck, Highland Park, and even out in Dearborn, yes, as well. So
within the metro area.
Exactly. Yeah. Thank you. And so really trying to, you know, in person, get out to various neighborhoods to share information about this opportunity. Doing, we call them coffee chats or coffee hours, but they're sort of one-on-one sessions also at different, usually it is a coffee shop or a bakery or some sort of local neighborhood hangout where hopefully we're literally physically more accessible to folks to come and kind of chat about their idea, give feedback on it, sometimes give feedback on the 150-word description, try to help make just help folks strengthen that application. And also by promoting the opportunity in multiple languages. So those are some of the things that we have done and we continue to try to do better at with each iteration of the Night Arts Challenge. So I think I consider that to be one of the ways we are trying to walk that talk. And finally, I think the third way is just by participating in the community. You know, philanthropic entities are also community members. So, you know, we participate with the community along with other sectors, you know, whether it's others, you know, civic leadership or civic organizations, you know, social service organizations, you know, educational organizations and just residents, to participate in, you know, shared objectives. And that's another way that we can help to, encourage change and accountability. We can hold each other accountable.
There are still people, I think, who, you know, look at the art world and they say, look, so much of art is just based in this inherent old European style of looking at the world. So much of Western tradition comes from a colonialist point of view. The anointed masters are almost exclusively dead white guys, and that people of color often occupy little more than a position of ornamentation or portrayed as stereotypical within the canon that we see represented in major museums. You know, the contemporary art world is, you know, arguably a little different, but it's had its own problems with it. Mm-hmm. How do you think about the things that art has to say amid all its baggage and flaws and why it's still worthy of funding?
Oh, gosh. Well, I think what art has to say is kind of what we all have to say, or what we each have to say. I think so many times we may find in art something expressed that we haven't found the words to describe ourselves, or we haven't even necessarily pinpointed that we were feeling until we may have, you know, seen it in a movie, seen it in a film, or heard it in a song, seen it, you know, on a canvas. I think that that is one of the most powerful things that art can do, which is kind of help us to understand ourselves better as individuals, as well as, you know, communities, and help each, us understand each other. And I think that, you know, the thing that art does so well that, is maybe unique compared to understanding something through, you know, studying history or taking a course or something, is that it connects with people both intellectually and emotionally. And I think when you can do both of those things, and not just one level or the other, it's incredibly more impactful. And so that's certainly why I, you know, am so thankful to be involved in the arts, and to have the opportunity to help support that in communities.
We've seen a number of arts nonprofits that have been trying to seize the moment and have started to diversify staff or invited artists to collaborate. Mm-hmm. But as we see in the case of MOCAD in recent weeks, even positions that were funded with lofty ideals in mind don't always produce a desired effect. Do you have thoughts on why that approach may not work?
Sure. You know, I think that, you know, we've seen that even with other types of hires. I think that, you know, just hiring one person or one or two people to do something and kind of expecting, you know, them to carry a burden, is not fair. You know, whether it's, hiring, people of color in certain roles or even hiring folks to do certain functions. You know, sometimes it might be to hire them to develop technology, you know, in that organization. And Knight has had some experience with this too. If it's just one or two people and the sort of support network within the organization isn't there, and the resources aren't there to support that work at a high level, it's just far less likely to succeed. And also, I think because, especially with regard to hiring people of color in particular roles, it is about the resources. You know, it's the difference to me anyway. It's the difference between, you know, having diversity on staff and actually having equity. You know, how are those people supported? You know, are they supported in meaningful ways? I think it's a similar issue to when organizations kind of have tokenistic programming. You know, if they're not, you know, engaging with members of the community and, you know, segments of the community and the population in meaningful ways versus sort of one-offs, then that's not going to gain any traction and real relationships aren't built. So I think that with any kind of work, if you are going to really make meaningful progress and gain traction, then there has to be a whole host of things in place, such as, you know, multiple people who are devoted to it, a true, you know, institutional commitment and culture that supports it. You know, the everyday little things that happen, for example, in a workplace that also kind of contribute to those things moving forward. All of those have to be in place to actually make progress.
You know, some of the folks that we've talked to on this topic have suggested that maybe part of the problem is our expectations for how art is funded right now. That if institutions were willing to work with a wider circle of donors, maybe making smaller gifts, that there might be more accountability to the community and maybe a better hope of more equity within the organizations that bring us the arts. Do you think that might change? I mean, you work with organizations ranging from individual artists to really large museums and institutions. Mm-hmm. How do you think that might change what we have in our communities right now?
I think it's a fascinating question. You know, we kind of have been seeing that for a while now in the American political landscape too, right? With sort of crowdfunding and, you know, certain candidates committing to, you know, raising their funds through small donations from more people, and sort of declining, you know, contributions from, say, super PACs or what have you. So I think it's interesting because it's one of the reasons it's interesting is it's a broader conversation than just arts and culture. I think that certainly when you diversify funding sources, you also diversify accountability. And that can be a really good thing, especially if you're an organization or an artist who is working in service of community. The more kind of stake that more aspects of a community or people in a community have in your work, the more opportunity there is for, you know, mutual accountability. I think that can be a really good thing. I think that sometimes that can exist, that idea can exist in some tension with, say, artistic vision or curatorial vision, if the, you know, if the approach is not as much a community engaged kind of approach. Another thing I think that has been really, really interesting to sort of see play out this year with the pandemic is how that diversification has actually, what that has meant with the impact of the pandemic. So, for example, Knight for quite some time since, you know, before I got to Knight, has really encouraged grantees to diversify funding sources, you know, to not be heavily reliant on us or even on philanthropy in general, to really encourage, you know, earned revenue as part of the mix of funding resources.
That would be things like ticket sales.
Yeah, exactly. It could be ticket sales. I mean, it could be merchandise, you know, selling t-shirts at your show. It could be a lot of things. And just to try to have more of a mix in funding resources. And so what's been interesting with the pandemic, some of the folks, a lot of the folks, organizations who have been hardest hit, were those who had done that. Because we couldn't have shows, you know, because, museums had to close and people weren't, you know, able to come and pay that admission fee. For those organizations who had in fact become less reliant on philanthropy, that they took the bigger hit. And so that has certainly been part of our conversations, and really, I wouldn't say we've arrived at any answers around that, but it's, you know, part of a conversation we've been having, you know, within Knight Foundation, as well as, you know, with organizations we support, is just, you know, kind of this eye-opening experience where it was just sort of this, wake-up call to, okay, something that I think for quite a while in arts and culture had been a bit of a holy grail, which is to become less reliant on philanthropy and have more earned revenue, ended up backfiring a bit in the current moment. Do I think that that's, you know, a long-term thing that we want to move away from earned revenue as a significant part of the income mix? I don't think so. But I do think it certainly warrants a reexamination of how we think about getting to sustainability.
Priya Sarkar is director of the Knight Foundation's arts program. Priya, thank you so much for talking to us about this.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate the conversation.